Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the iPro Date Participating Plan conference call with your moderator and host, Darren Triller and Diane Rue-Larange. All participants are in interactive mode, so if you do not have a self-mute feature, you can press star and then 6 to mute and unmute your line when you're not speaking. Sir and ma'am, you may begin.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We're very excited to have this call going because I think there's a lot of energy and a lot of different things happening at your different plans. And hopefully this opportunity to share what's going on in different plans in different parts of the state will actually stoke the fire a little bit more. Hopefully we can get some synergy going. So looking at the slides that Diane distributed, we've got a fairly tight agenda, so we'll try and keep things moving along. I'm going to spend a few minutes going over some issues relating to the data and things, and then Diane's going to talk about 10 minutes about the different tools and outreach items that we've got, and then we're very pleased to have several of you who have offered to give some personal experiences from your own plan's perspective on how the intervention's going, and then we hope to have some brainstorming time at the tail end so we can get some ideas as to new products or intervention items that you might like us to develop or to work on. So moving ahead, going on to the third and fourth slides with the data-related items, to give you a quick update on where we are at. I know we all had the hiccup there in January and February with the restrictions on how we were to share the data. So as of right now, you'll see from that grid, we have all the data from all of the plans who have been participating all along for quarters 1 and 2 of 2006, and that's the data that was used to give you those initial aggregate reports. What we're having trouble doing is getting all the data from everybody for quarters 3 and 4 and for even quarter 1 of this year. So in light of that, knowing that the data reports are not only helpful to look at, but they're helpful in processing and getting your interventions up and running, what I've decided to do, as you'll see on slide 5, is to ask that if you still owe us data or if you still have data in process that's to be delivered to us, to please strive to get that to us as soon as possible. And what I'm going to start doing, instead of just waiting until we get everyone's data at the same time, I'm going to try to start giving you individual reports on your own data in as quick a turnaround as possible. It won't give you the ability to compare yourself to the other plans right away, but it will give you some insight into your own status and things, and like the prescriber list of those who are identified will be helpful in the intervention. Once we get all the quarter three and quarter four data, by all means, we'll reissue an updated aggregate report, but we just couldn't see how it made sense to try and keep everyone on the same time frame, especially when we're trying to get the interventions rolling. In addition to that, we've been kicking around the idea of adding an additional appendix that would have more detail. It would identify that not only the doctors who are prescribing the drugs, but their beneficiaries, what drugs they're prescribing, perhaps which pharmacy they're using, things like that. And I've looked at some drafts over the last couple of days with our analysts, and what we decided is that it may be more useful to simply give you a data file in an Excel format or something comparable that includes the claims data for those potentially inappropriate drugs and all of those related fields. We felt that by giving you a data file, it would allow you to do more with it than just having a hard copy or printed report. It would allow you to merge to whatever, let's say, prescriber contact data files you've got, other things like that. So I think a data file will be more helpful to you. So please email any comments or anything regarding what you want in that file, but I think I'll have a draft to you very soon, and again, we can customize things personally for you if you'd like. Going on to slide number 7, the one other thing that I'd like to do, and I'm just waiting for it to go live on our webpage right now, I've passed the information on, is I've actually put a copy of the actual NDC file that we are using for our analysis. I've given it to our web people to make it live on our web page so that in the event that your own analysts and your own people internally would want to use that to do analysis inside, you could access that and use it however you'd see fit. So the whole idea is to try and get you your data turned around as quickly as possible and in as flexible a format as possible so that you can keep things rolling at your plan level. So as of right now, like I said, we've still got some plans that that we do still hope to get data from very soon. We are going to have drafts of that new data file to you very shortly. I'll have to send it to you on encrypted disk because those reports will have private health information in them. And any comments or questions or anything, feel free to either bring them up in the, later in the call or email me directly, and we'll go from there. So that's just a quick skinny on the status of the data reports, and now I'm going to turn it over to Diane.
Okay, hi everyone. I said this would be interactive, but so far it isn't, so but we'll be getting to it. So if we go on to slide 8, it just says that I'll be talking about the communication tools and the resources, and a good list is shown on the following two slides. It shows we have probably counting 12 handouts that we can give to the prescriber or to patients or to whomever, and it shows you how you can access them or get them. A lot of them are available online. Some of them you can't put your organizational logo on it. For instance, the trifold, which is number 2 on the list, you can't put your your logo on it, but you can order it online. And let's see what else. And of course, we have Spanish, English for the patient handouts, patient worksheets. It's Spanish, English with IPRO logo or your logo. I think that's pretty nice. And we're going down the list, and what we have is a tip sheet. Now, the tip sheet number 5, Kelly from Independent will be talking about that later. She'll be the first one to talk about a case scenario, but that tip sheet is her thing. And let's see. What else? Medication alert faxes, that's number 12. That is Jackie Raskin's thing, and she'll be talking about that as well. I do have an example, just to jog you, on slide 11. That's our prescriber guide. It's a clinical tool. That's another word for it. The trifolds come off of that one, and the tip sheets basically come off of that one. And then on slide 12, it's the first page because it's the back-to-front worksheet for the patient. And the backside, you know, is the medications, and it is supposed to be brought to the doctor. The patient's supposed to fill it out, both symptoms and medications. And you're familiar with that. That's online, of course. That can have your logo on it. And slide 13 shows you the tip sheet. Now, you probably not, none of you are familiar with it except Kelly, and Kelly can tell you how we developed that because we developed it in collaboration with Independent Health Plan. And now moving to slide, what are you going to do with the tools? What you do with tools is you try to get it to the prescriber because that's the behavior you want to change. So slide 14 talks about methods and models. And basically educational outreach is, we think, face-to-face meeting with the prescriber. Now, to do a face-to-face meeting with the prescriber, you have to go through what we call the front office staff, and that takes a little bit of effort. So we're going to slide 15, and that's the diagram. And the diagram shows how you, whoever initiates this, has to get to the prescriber. And there are several models of how one does get to the prescriber to do that face-to-face meeting. You have to enlist is you have to have the people, and all the people on the left part of this diagram. Who are they? So we can look at them on slide 16. That's the first person that I would like to talk about is the key contacts in the health plans. So we see that when we talk about the case scenarios, Kelly and Lisa and Joyce and Jackie are basically key contact people because they endeavor and they help us get to the prescriber through all the barriers you have to go through. Another people is, that's slide 17, is departmental staff. Now, some models use departmental staff, others don't. And if you look at the models on slide 18, you'll see that there's model A, model B, and model C. From the diagram, it's described that way. And model A is basically me, myself, and I, the IPRO coordinator, finally actually contacting the front office staff, asking to talk to the doctor, and actually doing a face-to-face visit with the doctor. And I have done this with Joyce, and she'll be the third presenter in this conference, and she'll say how that was done and how she got it moving in the organization. And one large provider group wanted an intervention letter, and, you know, she'll tell you things like that. Model B now, Lisa from Affinity will tell you how she's doing that. She's very tight with the provider relations staff, and she has done continuing education with them and in services with them, so she said it was no big deal to actually ask them to do something with anticholinergic meds. And Model C then is Kelly, and Kelly is working with the account executives, and they have, which is the provider relations staff, and there's a contact person then that was very involved in getting this face-to-face meeting with the prescribers done. So I think we're getting there. So slide 19 is the people that are going to tell you about their models and what they're doing, and
I was just going to ask if I could jump in real quick.
Yeah, Darren wants to jump in.
All right. So I just wanted to reiterate what Diana touched on, is that we've developed, I think, a decent toolkit of various items, which are either available on the web or otherwise. A few of the other items popped up kind of in the process as we worked with some of these individual plans where they needed either additional materials or tweaked materials to fit into their own processes. And that what we're hoping now to do as we turn it over to the others is to give all of you some insight into how they put those things into practice, what worked, what didn't, and then hopefully we can have some dialogue at the end about how we can keep the ball rolling. So
that's right.
With that, I guess we'll turn over to
Kelly. Kelly Verall, an independent. If you want mine, Natasha?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, this is Kelly Verall from Independent Health. Are in Buffalo, New York, and I just wanted to talk about kind of where we've gone so far. I think the first big step we took as we were getting involved here was we had a conference call with our internal staff and Darren and Diane as we were kind of getting ready to roll this out. We already had a committee existing that had originated around fall safety, decreasing the risk of falls, which is kind of the anticholinergics fit into that same basket. That's one of the reasons to avoid anticholinergic drugs, because they increase the risk of falls. So brought together the same group. There's a nurse who was overseeing that committee, who was involved with geriatrics, was her primary view. And then we also had one of the other key players that was there was Sandy Hoover, who is a physician account executive. And one of her her take on it, when I first pulled the conference call together, I think I was thinking that Diane was going to be the one to end up going out and doing the face-to-face with the physicians. But Sandy, first of all, let me just say it was a great meeting. It went really well, just having everybody there together at the same time, having Diane and Darren on the phone at the same time. It seemed like we had all the right people there, and we were able to make decisions and move forward with it. And, I mean, it worked. It was one of the best meetings. It was great. One of the things Sandy Hoover brought up with the physician account executive was the fact that we have a team of about 10 physician account executives here who see all our physicians on a regular basis. All the participating physicians, they go to the offices, and they have a relationship established already with these physicians. So when they go to the office, whether they're bringing new information, a new way of reporting something, a new way of whatever it is, they usually can get a few minutes of the doctor's time. You know, they keep it short, and they're able to, through that relationship, be able to get to see the physician. So she really wanted to keep this to the physician account executive staff, and I think it's going to work well. They had gone out already once at that point. We had picked 32 physicians who they already had a fairly good relationship with, who were had a high volume geriatric practice, who had and who also had members on our list from the state project. and gave them the original physician, what was it, the prescriber guide. It was kind of a quick, you know, they were in there for other reasons, but wanted to give them, talk about it a little bit, just give them a copy of the prescriber guide and just touch base on it a little bit. The plan, though, now is to follow up with what we developed as part of this meeting was the tip sheet. It's very similar information to what's in the prescriber guide. A lot more white space. It's just kind of drug names. It doesn't go into a lot of detail as to why the drug is anticholinergic, but it's, you know, this is the anticholinergic drug and these are the alternatives. It seems as we've done other tip sheets for other projects, and the layout kind of works well. With a lot of white space, they're more likely to see the drug names and things like that. That was something that we'd like to see. So we developed a tip sheet as part of that process, and we're going to be having Diane come in to actually do. We haven't scheduled it yet. We are waiting for the tip sheet to be approved by our communications department, which actually just got the email about this morning. So that looks like that's going well. And so once we get that situated, we'll have Diane come out and meet with the physician account executives again and kind of go through the whole team. They have a weekly staff meeting, so the whole team will sit down together, and they'll be able to pass on the message to the physicians.
All right. Hey, Kelly, can I just chime in a little bit?
Yeah, I was rambling on.
All right. Again, I just want to stress that that's a great example of our just trying to fit whatever we already developed into the process you've already got working. So the tip sheet, you actually gave us a copy of one of your previous, and we were able to format ours to look exactly like your other. So your staff was familiar with it, and the physicians were used to seeing it. The other thing that we provided to you, I think, was at least a sample of some of the information off the web page on a CD, because your staff, when they went out to those first 30 or so doctors, realized the docs were reluctant to go to the web page, but your staff wanted something they could show them if the opportunity arose, so we burned a few discs. So just another example of how we'll try and tweak things as we go to fit whatever you've got going on already.
Absolutely. It's been, and I can't believe how fast you turn around the stuff. I mean, we sent you the copy of our tip sheets, and
it's our art department.
We're not very busy. We appreciate the feedback. So anything else, Kelly, you'd like to share at this point? Or we're pretty much waiting for your communications folks or
somebody to approve
the tip sheet.
Yep, and I think that was just signed off on this morning, so I think we can go ahead with that.
Right.
Okay, we'll hear from you on that then.
Yeah, we'll talk about that offline. Yeah.
Now, I guess we could open it real quick. If anyone had any specific questions for Kelly at the time, they could do the *6 to unmute if they wanted to, and we'll give a few seconds for that.
Kelly, this is Lisa. So the first thing you did was go out with the regular provider tool, and then on the second visit you went back with your more plan-specific tip sheet.
Yeah, the second visit hasn't actually happened yet, but that's the plan.
Okay, good.
All right, anybody else?
Then it's Lisa.
All right, Lisa, tag, you're it.
Okay, hi, everybody. We're actually one of the newer players to the group. We've only begun Medicare this year. So we were very excited about this project. We've been following your progress last year, and we're only too happy we had some data to submit, although I must admit it's been quite small. But basically, we took the approach with really getting our provider relations representatives involved. So what we did, and maybe let me back up, is just so you know, as some background, our PBM has an initiative where they retrospectively do a DUR, and they're sending letters to providers if the BEERS criteria hit or if patients are on 8 or more meds. So sort of in the background since January, that's been happening. At first I was concerned maybe there'd be some duplication in efforts, but the projects are similar but yet different because the list that the PBM is using is not all-inclusive of the BEERS list. They've just kind of picked some top drugs. And it really is a very passive approach with the letters going to providers. So we were excited that this maybe could target really the providers that needed more more enforcement. So the first thing we did is, and it's going to be going out this summer, is a newsletter. We took the information that was provided by IPRO and sort of formatted it into our provider newsletter, and that'll be going out to over 5,000 providers, kind of just explaining the project with information on the tools and how to go to the website. Then where we're involved now is that our provider reps go out to some core primary care physicians, and they have face-to-face time. And we've actually developed for them kind of a one-page detail piece explaining this program, and then they'll use that time to also drop off a trifold. So I provided an in-service, basically not great clinical detail to these provider reps, but explaining the program to them and how this is of value to providers, and they might want to, you know, check out the tools that are available, and they'll actually have samples of the patient surveys with them so they can kind of show the providers. And then internally we're working to put hyperlinks on our website that'll go out to the IPRO DADE site so that, you know, providers know that there's CME out there as well as these tools. And we've got scheduled for the end of June, actually, a regional provider meeting, and it's our opportunity to kind of showcase and highlight this program as a clinical initiative and use that forum as an opportunity to alert providers as well. So in terms of what's next, I guess my thought is, you know, to actually use the CME that was provided and perhaps host it internally here for our staff, as well as maybe invite some outside providers. And we certainly want to take advantage of Diane doing, you know, one-to-one detailing to the top providers once we, you know, have the volume out there. And then, Darren, I think it's a good idea if you give us, you know, raw data in Excel format, because I'd like to then take it and give a sort of a report card out to all the providers whose names hit this list, sort of, you know, comparing them against the plan measure.
Yeah, we'd be real happy to do that. And, again, I think by kind of separating and allowing us to report back to you individually instead of trying to do everyone at once, it gives us the ability to turn it right back to you very, very quickly. So hopefully, and then being in Excel, it's flexible, so you can do anything with you want. And I think Diane and I agreed this morning that the project's turning more into our helping you individual plans implement this than our trying to do it ourselves. It's taking on more of a flavor of what can we do to help you, because so many of you have been so interactive and so energetic, and I think just our giving you more tools that you can work with to help you do it is what our value in all of this. So if there's something else that comes up that you want a little differently or whatever, just don't be shy, and we'll get you whatever we can.
And then as we move along, we hope to, you know, contribute to some local professional organizations, pharmacy and nursing, and maybe, you know, contribute to their newsletters or some local meetings that they have so that they too know that these tools exist and perhaps can use them. Although I admit we really haven't submitted a lot of claims. We're just beginning with the first quarter. One barrier that I was concerned about and I already see is that it's going to be difficult for us maybe to even target who these prescribers are, because for our teaching facilities, what's required to adjudicate our claims are a DEA number. And what happens with a lot of the residents is that they're using the facility DEA, and that defaults to a hospital rather than a prescriber. So I just, you know, open up and wonder how other plans are handling that. And are you able to really identify who the prescriber is? And are you using a license number rather than a DEA? So if there's anybody that could offer me some guidance, I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, one thing, Lisa, I know that Joy, she's going to be on next, but her plan is using license numbers. So, but anyway, anyone that wants to answer Lisa's question can just hit *6 to say something.
Interesting.
No one?
Oh, I guess I can talk more. Lisa, you're right, and I think from talks with a data group from the from all the QIOs that I'm on, everyone pretty much has that problem. I think the managed care plans may have more detailed contact information with their prescribers than the standalone plans. There are some data sets available that are up to date, you know, physician directories and things, but they're very, very expensive to access and things. So you're right, we're going to have to keep trying to work around the frailties and the problems with those DEA numbers. One approach that I know one of the plans, and maybe Joyce will talk about it a little bit, is the idea of contacting large groups that you know are highly represented in your population. And I think you even talked about going and doing grand rounds and other things like that. So it's not as directive an approach, but I know from experience with one of Diane's contacts that there was an individual physician who popped up in the data set. But when she spoke with, I think, a medical director for the group, that individual said, well, let me talk to them. So maybe there's some benefit in going through the medical directors or the main offices for large prescriber groups. So that might be not a direct way, but at least an indirect way to know you're getting at a lot of docs. So that's something else I'd like to kick around a little bit more, maybe at the end or maybe following up the call is, do you have a handful or a short list of large groups in the in your regions? Because a lot of them, I'm sure, have routines for quarterly or monthly meetings. They already have communication systems amongst themselves. And if we can tap into those, it may give a lot more yield than simply trying to contact any individual prescriber. So does that make sense, Lisa, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think it does, but keep in mind, my problem is really with residents at a hospital, so then the group would become the hospital. And there really isn't, you can't use DEAs because right. Residents don't have a unique DEA. They don't even have, in many cases, a unique license number. It would default to their attending.
Just so you know, I did, within the last month or so, we sent out a sample of all the DAVE material to every residency program in the state, and offered or suggested they possibly use them in the training. We told them about the CE program and things like that. And we got that contact list through a separate iPro contract where they we have teams that go in and check their work hours. Mm-hmm. It's a hospital compliance program. So we hope maybe, I haven't heard anything directly back from any of them, but I'm hoping perhaps at least some of these residency programs will take that lead. If you have a large facility in your area that you want us to go after, I'd have no problem trying to contact them and maybe getting all the residents sitting in a room if there's a schedule for such and giving a program directly to them.
Okay, great.
Okay, Lisa, we'll have Joyce talk now.
Sounds good.
Okay,
thanks,
and later.
Lisa.
Bye-bye. Joyce?
Hi.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi, it's Joyce Sang from Hip Health Plan. So Diane was helping us with the academic detailing, and it started off with her identifying the top 25 prescribers for 2006 for two different categories, those prescribing anticholinergics to all our beneficiaries and the other group prescribing anticholinergics to our members with dementia. And in total, we identified 47 unique prescribers. Our physicians, they're either practicing in medical groups or as individual providers in the fee-for-service network. So to get to them, what I did was I emailed our relationship managers, those that are responsible for dealing with either the medical groups or the fee-for-service network, and we asked them how they wanted to proceed with this. So one of the groups, one of the relationship managers invited me to come to one of the meetings that had the leadership for the medical group, and I went to that meeting, described the project, and wanted to see how interested they were in having Diane come and meet with the physicians from that group. And they were really open to it. What they wanted us to do, though, was instead of contacting each provider directly, the leadership wanted to send out a letter to the providers letting them know about the initiative. And so I told Diane, and she drafted the letter, and which explained the initiative and that she would be contacting them. And right now, before they sent that letter out, the leadership they wanted to see some of the drugs that these physicians were prescribing. So we're right now in the process of having them take a look at that data before they send the letter out, and then Diane's going to be going out to the offices and meeting with all those providers for the academic detailing. For some of the other groups, they were fine with just sending the contact information for the physicians to Diane so that she could just contact them directly. And I know that she's already spoken to some of these physicians and spoken to them about the initiative, and I think she already has information on that.
Yeah, it was very informative. The physicians were terrific. I had a range of internal medicine, dermatology, which I was surprised, and, of course, urology. So I talked to these doctors, and they were very interested. They always say, yes, I do know about anticholinergics, but what can I do? It was terrific, and that's what we are attempting to do, is to engage the doctors into at least thinking about it.
So, Joyce, at this point, how do you see things going in the, let's say, the next several weeks or so? I got that data file. Was that what you were looking for? Is that what your group needed so that they could see the actual drugs and things?
Yeah, I sent that off, and I think they're just going to take a look at it right now, and then once they take a look at it, they're just going to send out that letter, and then I guess once that letter has been sent out, someone will be contacting Diane and letting her know how to proceed with, I think maybe just if she'll come to the group and just talk to all of the physicians at once. I think that's going to be worked out afterwards.
Fantastic.
Great.
Now, you also sent out copies of that prescriber guide in a newsletter?
Yes, we did. We worked with you to make sure that for the general recommendations for the alternative drugs to be prescribed, that at least one of our formulary drugs was in each of those categories. So that went out with our May formulary update to approximately 35,000 physicians.
Oh, that's great. I really appreciate your go ahead and doing that. And actually, I would imagine that there's got to be some overlap, I would think, between your physician base and some of the other plans that are downstate. I think that's probably an added benefit. I know everyone's looking at your own individual numbers, but I think if we get the message out in a few different directions and a few different ways from multiple plans, it's possible the same doctor may see two or three different things, and that reinforcement I think is going to be real important if we're going to see any real prolonged change in habits and things. So thanks for doing that, Joyce. Anything else you'd like to share, Joyce?
No, that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
If any questions, hit *6 right now, and then we'll move on to Jackie Raskin. Anyone want to hit *6 to ask Joyce a question? Nope, I don't hear anything. Okay, Jackie, are you there?
I'm there.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jackie. Introduce yourself.
My name is Jackie Raskin. I'm a clinical pharmacist with Member Health, and I wanted to thank Karen and Diane for the terrific job that they're doing in helping us analyze the data and really get started. We haven't used any of their materials directly. What we've been doing is incorporating their materials into ours. And just for some background information, it sounds like some of the groups that have presented are MAPDs. We're a PDP, so we really don't have access to a complete network of physicians. We're a nationwide plan. We're the fourth largest in the country. And physicians are not married to our formulary. We don't have any sort of prescribing rights over them. So we're really just targeting community care Rx patients throughout the country. We started off with the data analysis, and since we're Medicare, we do some commercial business, but mostly Medicare Part D. And since we are Medicare Part D, most of our population is the geriatric population over 65, and we did have a percentage of patients who were taking inappropriate medications. We used Darren's list, and I'm not sure what you posted on the web, Darren, but Darren helped us with an NDC list for both the anticholinergic medications and also the HEDIS drugs for HEDIS 2007 measures and HEDIS previous HEDIS drugs. And what we tried to do is take this project and really address both our anticholinergic drugs and the Beers listed drugs and the HEDIS drugs, and all these lists are somewhat different, although they do overlap, so that is confusing. Another thing that really jump-started this measure for us is that we were told by CMS for open enrollment for 2008, what they were going to do is compare each plan based on their inappropriate drug prescribing in the elderly. And that was going to be posted on the CMS website for open enrollment. And they haven't quite defined yet as to what this list is going to be. It may be based off of the MCQA list, which is sort of a conglomerate of the HEDIS drug list and the Beers drug list and all these inappropriate drug measures. So what we started doing was, first of all, we analyzed our data, and Darren evaluated our data in the state of New York. What we did is take the entire list and evaluate our entire plan data, so that we were able to take the project and expand it to our entire plan, not just the state of New York. We then figured out what were the most highly offending drugs. You know, for example, propoxyphene, although it's not an anticholinergic drug, came up as a high offender of an inappropriate medication in the elderly. We drafted three different types of communication. We drafted patient letters, and we created two templates. One of the patient letter template is a Beers listed template, which is just where we can, you know, say your doctor has prescribed this drug, it's considered inappropriate, this is why it's considered inappropriate, you know, please address this with your physician. And what we did was we took a lot of the target symptoms, if they were appropriate. We had two templates, both a Beers template and an anticholinergic template for the anticholinergic drugs, and we took the measures off of the patient tool that Darren developed and sort of addressed that within a letter, and that's basically two patient template letters that we're planning on using. Corresponding to that, we developed specific physician letters based on the Beers drugs or the inappropriate medication, and the style of these letters is for the physician to take action. So sort of in bullet points, what we tell the physician is, you know, we have identified that you are prescribing propoxyphene. This is why it's inappropriate for your patient, you know, in a list of bullet points supporting what we're trying to tell them. And then what we do is offer formulary alternatives to propoxyphene within the letter itself. And we do purchase one of these large databases. We target physicians based on their DEA numbers. And we've done this kind of communication with other interventions that we're working on, in which we target the physician and then send faxes based on that. We also thought, since many physicians, we didn't want to bombard physicians based on, you know, each specific Beers or inappropriate anticholinergic drug. We figured physicians would get tired of seeing many communications from us. What we also did was develop a batch letter in which we say something to the effect of, it's also a template, and we say, your patient has been identified in 2007 as taking X amount of inappropriate medications. And we developed some sort of on an Excel spreadsheet what the inappropriate medication would be and what the alternatives would be, and then the concern in the elderly. And this takes into account the Beers and the anticholinergic drugs as well. So we're sort of internally debating at this point in time which method we're going to use. We're going to discuss it with our Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee. As an aside, we developed something based off of Darren's tool for anticholinergic drugs, but we did this both based on the Beers list and the anticholinergic drug list to post on our website. We have a clinical resources sort of division of our CCRX.net website, so we're going to publicize it there as well as publicize it in newsletters. And we're looking forward to getting started. One of the barriers that we have always is changing prescribing patterns, which is not always easy for physicians who are set in their ways. But we're hoping with this kind of education, as well as reinforcement from the patient side, will make a difference to our patient population.
That sounds so good. Sounds so good, Jackie.
Okay, does anyone have any questions for Jackie at this point?
Yeah, actually, this is Kelly from Independent Health.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Jackie. I was just wondering about the letters directly to the patient. And We've toyed with that, and there's always been some concern as to how that's going to be taken by the prescribers. How can you tell my patients this is inappropriate? Or what, even if you word it not quite as strongly, it gets touchy, and you know
it does
we get some
touchy. And we've had this discussion in terms of patient letters with other interventions that we do. So the plan is really to use the patient letter after the physician fax has been sent out and nothing's changed. But we really do feel that, you know, patients are their own advocates, we hope. And, you know, if the physician doesn't respond, at least we try to couch it as appropriate as possible in appropriate language. But we really felt that this two-pronged approach would be necessary to make changes.
Have you done that kind of thing with other in other areas before where you've sent a member letter following up?
We haven't done it here yet. I mean, we're a relatively new plan. We've been in operation for about a year and a half.
Okay.
And so far, our communication has really ended with physician communication, either doing a single communication and then a follow-up communication. But, you know, this is an area where we really want to make a difference, and we're hoping to follow up our physician letters with patient letters this time.
Good. Sounds good.
If I can add, I think the quality improvement community, I think, is moving in that direction of the beneficiary and their family members being, you know, shoppers and stewards and things of healthcare. And we were already publicizing data on quality of hospitals and outcomes and things, quality of nursing homes and those things. So I don't think it's too far afield from that sort of reporting. And I wouldn't doubt it, like you said, eventually if CMS or Pharmacy Quality Alliance or someone is going to start publicly disclosing, you know, a lot of these measures as they get further along. But all this information is available to beneficiaries. We kick this around here, too, the same issue of, you know, what's too much information for the patients and things. And the truth of the matter is everything's available to them on the Internet. And if there is this growing body of evidence that these drugs impair cognition and increase falls and things like that, it's a duty to let the patients know that. And if they're getting the package insert and the mandatory counseling and things from the pharmacies and things, that information is actually already probably in there, too, the sedation and dry mouth and constipation and falls and all of that stuff. So you know, it's always a good conversation, Kelly, but I guess part of me really feels that we need to move, we as a community, maybe as a profession, need to move forward to really empowering these patients a little more. I've actually thought about possibly trying to get a, after we make a good attempt at trying to educate prescribers and reach out to them, is possibly generate some articles or something that are directly targeting either beneficiaries or just seniors in the community through different magazines, you know, some of these, I don't know, through AARP or somebody, but just start putting some information out on anticholinergics because I don't think people realize it, and my own parents included have taken some of these drugs and have had problems with them. So that's my two cents. But any other questions or comments for Jackie on what Member Health's doing? All right. Now, was there someone else on the list, or we're going to give Kelly her second at bat as far as the anticholinergic thing?
Yeah, since Kelly has to leave at 2, can we just jump to slide 22, and it's about the AC burden calculator, and Kelly can just tell us what that's about. And because it's very intriguing, very interesting. And then we can go back to open discussion from all of you to hear about your successes or not and where we're going to go next. So, Kelly, are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Actually, as we were beginning to roll out a lot of the Pro Date stuff, I was talking to the MTM pharmacists here. We've got 4 part-time MTM pharmacists here, and I was talking to them about, you know, just the whole anticholinergic pieces and any thoughts they had as to, you know, how they can make it work in MTM and, you know, just getting some ideas from them. And that very night, they happened to be at a CE program where they got, it was a Janssen CE program, and they handed out these CD-ROMs of this program called AC Decreasing AC Burden, or AC Burden, it was the name of it, where it actually gives a score to the to each drug. They've got 100, like, the top prescribed drugs, where you get an actual score based on the dose of how strong the anticholinergic burden is. It's a number based on assays that were done. And it's, you know, the way that the program was intended, and this is, they were at this program as a, because on the side they also do nursing home business, as consultant pharmacists. So you would plug in a patient's medication regimen, like their full regimen, and each drug and dose gets its own score, and you can see overall, you know, what their score is. And, I mean, as an example, they give, you know, somebody that was on Detral LA and Benadryl and Paxil and Zantac, all those things have a slight score, but it added together, that comes up to a score of a 28, which is fairly high. And then they give examples of how you would plug in alternatives to those. And there's alternatives available to all of them, or even decreasing the dose of them, and they were able to get the score down to 5.5. So it was a significant difference. And you can kind of see numbers. And what we were thinking was we could use this also as we're working with physicians, especially on the individual ones we're going face-to-face with, where we can, you know, give them, aside from giving them their list of drugs, we can give them a number to go with it and be able to say, you know, this is, there is a significant burden, a significant anticholinergic burden here, and there are alternatives, and be able to, you know, show even if, you know, switching a couple or how that, how those kind of switches would help.
So you, are your MTM people still evaluating that, Kelly? Are you still contemplating
got,
how you're going to integrate that? Or?
We able to load the software into our systems, and the MTM pharmacists have it available to them. It's only been available to them for about a week or two, and I'm not sure how much they've actually had a chance to use it.
Well, I'd be interested to hear how that goes. Actually, this is where I have to throw out a disclaimer from iPro side, just that because the software that you're talking about is something that's being made available through one of the drug companies, I just have to say that we don't necessarily, I'm glad that you're aware of it, and obviously you can share your experiences with it with the group. We can't endorse it per se, but we can obviously make you aware of it, but whether you choose to use it or not, it's just one of those situations where we're not endorsing the product itself. I'm not going to offer an opinion as far as good, bad, or whatever. But Kelly, by all means, if you have good luck with it and you have good experiences with it and you've evaluated and find it to be effective, then by all means, please share those experiences with the rest of the group.
Exactly.
And now that I've got my disclaimer out of the way, I just received an email today from someone at the same company that said they also have an equivalent product that does assessment of narcotics or pain regimens and does the same thing for potentially inappropriate pain medications. So the same company, if you want to get in touch with Kelly, I guess, about the anticholinergic software, the same company also has a product that can help you evaluate pain management. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else, Kelly, from regarding that?
No.
Yeah, the one thought I had, or the one question I had, is whether you have to load the patient profiles individually, or is there any feature where a data set, such as your PDE claims for a large group of people, could be run through that? Do you know, Kelly, or is it just a one-by-one?
Right now it's just a one-by-one. We talked, when they came in and presented it to us, we talked about it, and they definitely wanted to move towards being able to load a whole data set, but I don't know if it's not even in the works yet. I mean, I don't know. It'd be a ways off before that would happen.
All right.
What we were looking at doing, actually, was to try and pull the, because there's only 100 drugs, and it's not that big. If we, ran it individually and just kind of made our own spreadsheet.
Yeah. I'm not a computer guru, but, if member health, if what Jackie spoke of, if what they're doing is basically taking our NDC list, and they're generating these letters and faxes, they're essentially doing the same thing as that program does, and they're doing it with a batch data set. So you could potentially, if you got our NDC list off the web page, could run your own filter periodically, routinely, or even constantly against your PDE claims data, however soon you get it, and get similar type hits. It might take some more work internally. But that, again, that's why I wanted to make that NDC file available to you, because it might give you more flexibility where you could do those things in-house. If you get data at the end of every day, you might be able to run it every day for your MTM folks or something. So let's keep kicking that around as to how we can do things to help you to incorporate with your MTM folks.
Okay.
And I guess I'd like to throw it out there to anybody out there. We haven't spoken a lot about MTM. But I'm wondering, do any of you plans out there have ongoing MTM programs with MTM pharmacists that might either be already using the DATE stuff or that I might be able to reach out to discuss the DATE? Anybody got any MTM comments?
Darren, we have a separate, for our MTM community patients, for the ambulatory population, we offer face-to-face, but for our long-term care population, we contract out with the University of Arizona. And one of the things we're targeting for 2007 is also it's also a fact-based communication. We're targeting the Beers drugs and the anticholinergic drugs as well. And we are running that filter of anticholinergic and dementia agents as well. So,
okay, that's Jackie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
So, that's something that we're going to be working on in long-term care.
All right, wonderful. Anybody else have any MTM-related comments? All right. Thank you, Kelly, for sharing all those things. I guess at this point, we'll just kind of open it up for any other Any other comments or questions? Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet have any either success stories or problems with what we've been doing that we could maybe discuss and kick around a little? All right. Well, then at this point, I would invite you to submit any questions or comments. We do have an evaluation to be completed, if you could. It's always helpful to get your feedback. We have some ideas we'd at least like to throw out that you could either comment on now or via email, and they're included in the slides. We're always interested in doing new things and putting out more tools and resources for you. We'd be interested to know whether now that we've had this discussion amongst you different plans, would you be interested in our setting up a secure password-protected listserv or bulletin board where you could interact with one another and post comments and have pretty confidential conversations about your efforts? We'd be happy to do that. We have the ability on our webpage to do that. We talked about the AC burden calculator. Kelly did. We'd enjoy hearing more feedback from you on whether you have large provider groups with key contacts in your area. And by provider groups, it could be, like I said, residency programs, large facilities, or actual practice groups in the community, because we can address them directly if you'd like. One idea, we haven't been getting a lot of play on the CE program on the webpage. But one idea we had is possibly either myself or Diane or perhaps one of our clinical experts putting together a series of teleconferences, perhaps in September, and make them available at different times of the day over the course of a week. So let's say we had a couple during the day and a couple in the evening. Would that be helpful to you so that you could recruit your own physicians and staff and other people to sit in on those? Any other ideas you have, please send them along. And again, we'd be willing to do whatever we can to develop those resources for you. So I'll open up one last time. Any questions or comments from anybody?
How interested are you on an online chat community?
I think I don't know. This is Kelly. I think I'd be interested in that.
Okay.
It's the same thing we've done with our expert panel where, like I said, it's password protected, and so you would log in. The only people who would have access would be yourselves and us here at iPro, and you're able to post comments, questions, respond, things like that. So I will go ahead and set that up and issue passwords and things to you, and then what we could do is have a quick call some afternoon and go just through a quick orientation for that if you'd like it. Other things I've got lined up. Pharmacy groups, if you have a large chain or two or a long-term care pharmacy in your area that you would like me to speak to, I'd be happy to. I've been invited to talk to the folks at ChemRx, who is a consultant pharmacy and long-term pharmacy group, I guess, downstate, and I will do some outreach to others if you want me to contact them. We can try and encourage their pharmacists to do the CE, and I'd actually go and talk to them live if they could get a group of them together. I'll be talking to the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists, their New York State chapter, in about 2 weeks at their state meeting, and we'll be sharing all the tools with them. So hopefully we can hit a lot of the consultant pharmacists that way. I've been talking to the local chapter of the Nurse Practitioners Group about possibly getting on their state meeting agenda for the fall. And so any other groups, any chains, any organizations you want me to try and get out and see, I love to talk, as you can tell, so I'd be happy to do that. So, with that, I think we're up to about an hour, and I know Kelly's got to run. So unless anyone else wants to pipe in real quick, we'll set you free.
Yeah, there's some people we didn't hear from. I just can start. How about CDPHP? Sue, do you have anything to say or anything you'd like to go from here or anything new? If you're there, Sue, I don't know the roll call yet.
Yes, Diane. Sue and I are here. It's Wendy. We don't have anything to add at this point.
Okay, that's terrific. And let's see, then we have Davey. Are you here from Elder Plan? No, I guess Davey's
here. Oh, no, yes, I am here.
Oh, okay. Davey, can you tell us, you posted our website on, I guess, your web page. How'd that go?
We're actually still in the process of doing that. We just cleared that through our P&T committee. So we're going to post that on our website soon.
So do you have any suggestions or any way?
No, just listening in on the
doing something like
our
that
strategy
plan was
done. So we can incorporate that in with our plan.
Yeah, and you knew that there was such a thing as a web page, so you just went to the communications director? Did you have to go through the medical affairs committee or anything?
We had to go through discuss at the pharmacy and therapeutics committee and then the clinical practice committee, and then we're working with our provider relations department.
There are three committees you had to go through, or three departments you had to go through, huh?
Yes.
Okay, so, does anyone else want to chime in? Because I think people have to go.
Yeah, this is Lynn Schifrin from Humana.
Hey, Lynn.
Hello.
How are you?
Just fine. I just wanted to let you know that actually I had presented in our Corporate Quality Improvement Committee yesterday, and talking about, as the folks from Member Health were saying, the fact that, you know, CMS is going to be posting these results on the NCQA drugs to be avoided list, so that we do have a provider safety intervention going on called RxWise, which basically generates safety warnings relating to the list as well as to drug-drug interactions to prescribers. But I was really listening intently about how you're dealing with the member piece, because we've had a lot of concerns on that. Humana tends to be very member-focused in our messaging, and one of the things that we've come up against is the legal and risk concerns about notifying patients that they were on a potentially, quote, inappropriate drug, and then tracking whether or not changes in the prescriptions were made and putting ourselves at risk of liability if we don't follow through on each of those recommendations. So I would be real curious if anybody else had, you know, run up against that kind of resistance in getting your member education plans going.
It's open.
Lynn, I appreciate your sharing that. That, I think maybe one reason why I was leaning towards maybe just doing a general information campaign in the community is because maybe it takes you one step removed from being responsible for directly contacting an individual. So if you sent that letter out to all your beneficiaries that listed the drugs, then perhaps that might be a way of saying, no, if they happen to be on it, great, but otherwise... It's information that should be available, I think, to seniors. A lot of the folks, I've done home visits and brown bag sessions in senior apartments and things. A lot of these folks are using over-the-counter drugs that aren't even populated in this data set. So your sleep aids and things like that. So maybe one approach would just be general education to all beneficiaries on the appropriate use of anticholinergic drugs. And if you can do that in a way that removes you one step from intervening on one particular patient and taking that responsibility, it might be a good way to do it. I can't put my finger or can't put my brain on the paper that I just read, but I know that it drew a correlation between education and socioeconomic class with use of over-the-counter sleep aids and things, that the people with more money and higher education were more likely to self-medicate and to seek out drugs and things to help improve sleep and things. So... And I've seen that, again, in actual practice in retirement homes. So one approach might be maybe it's time we just kick up the general education campaign in the community.
And also, Lynn, when we start this online community, maybe we can start this as a thread. You know, how does one send out a public a letter? Or, you know, we can start that. That'd be a good discussion because... we've discussed it on emails, and it just keeps on going round and round. You know, this is a couple of months ago we did that.
And just out of curiosity, I know that, you know, open enrollment things coming up in the fall. Where are the plans at with formularies? And I guess part of this with Part D doesn't make sense, is that the federal government is mandating you include certain drugs in your formulary and then publicly disclosing how many people are getting drugs that they don't want you to have. And I guess... It seems kind of crazy, and I'm just wondering, is there anything individual plans have conceived doing related to their formulary, needing prior auths if patients are over 65, anything like that. Have you considered something along those lines, Lynn, or anybody else?
That's a really good point, and something that I can take forward, because I think that that's a great idea.
I don't think anyone wants to entirely abolish the use of the drugs, or the FDA would take them off the market, but by golly, they do need to use them a lot more judiciously. And so I guess I'd be a proponent. I know the pharmacists I know would kill me if I suggested another prior auth, and I know it's got logistical problems and provider relations issues associated with it. But if plans are going to be start being held accountable in a public forum for the use of these drugs, maybe it's time to at least kick around ways that you just build something into the system. All right.
Sharon,
anybody else have anything to share?
Sharon, I have another question. The patient worksheet, you know, I noticed if we are looking to develop something that will go to for patients,
mm-hmm.
Is the thought to ever include a list of drugs for patients?
To, like, auto-populate it, or do you mean to give the list of drugs to avoid to the patients?
Yeah, to give it to the patients, the list of drugs to avoid.
Well, again, it gets back to our expert panel. You know, we discussed it. I think they wanted to not include it on the list. I guess those same reasons, but that the list is available on our webpage if they wanted it. You're right. I mean, and maybe we're being disingenuous to a degree of saying, gee, yes, we should send these letters directly to the patients, where we ourselves didn't put that whole list on the worksheet. Our hope was with that tool is to facilitate the dialogue, I guess, between the patient and their doctor, to get an up-to-date list and to make the resources available to the doctors. And our plan, like I said, in the back of my mind, was to eventually roll out some public service type announcements that include those lists of drugs.
And also it says talk to your doctor. It's probably least offensive. I mean, you put out the list of drugs, they'd be asking you, and there's so many different formularies for them.
Yeah. So I like Diane's idea that putting a threat, I think it's a discussion we need to have. I think there's two discussions maybe. The one is about how to best inform patients directly, and then possibly a second thread of what to do regarding updating formularies or system changes that might be appropriate should CMS be moving towards public reporting on these drugs. But thank you for bringing that up. You're right. It's a real sticky wicket.
Okay, just before we go, I just want to ask if Audrey's here.
Yes, I'm here.
Any comments, Audrey?
No, I don't have anything to add at this point. Thank you.
Would you like an online community chat room?
I think that would be helpful.
Okay, great. And then I'm going to ask if Leah is here.
I'm here. I was listening intently to all the presenters. Hi, Darren. How are you? I agree with the different methods that people have followed, and I would love to do the same, except that, as you know, we had absolutely nobody who was getting inappropriate drugs. And I'd love to say it's because we're so wonderful, but the truth of the matter is because we just didn't have enough patients to really come up with anybody who was taking inappropriate medications. I think going forward, given the fact that we are growing, we have reached, I believe, right now, close to 600 members who are getting Medicare Part D drugs. And, of course, compared to Humana, which has really thousands and thousands upon patients, I guess eventually we will do something if we do encounter the problem. And being proactive is great, but when I can't show to the physicians that they're not appropriate, it's kind of hard to proactively tell them, well, you shouldn't be doing this when they aren't doing to begin with.
Yeah. Right.
And I know what you said about prior authorizations and you don't want to introduce it, but frankly, from the Medicaid perspective, what I've been doing is that sometimes is the only way to change the patterns. And despite how unliked it is and despite how the physicians aren't really thrilled about it, we find that the only way to really educate them on one basis is to speak with them directly at the time when they want the drug. And many of them have no idea and they're very receptive to the education, and some of them are old school, and that's what they want, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Good.
And I had a physician today.
That conversation in the forum, because you know, there may be different ways to go about doing it. Maybe get creative with prior auth. Maybe it's not when they get any one of those drugs, but maybe it's the folks who, if they're on 9 or more drugs and get a second anticholinergic or something along those lines, but set a bar somewhere that's defensible that you're willing to stand at. Because obviously the literature, certain ones are more potent than others, and obviously more of them are worse than fewer of them. So maybe it's not an absolute threshold that you get any, but a patient who's obviously on many drugs and is getting multiples might be something worth considering. So I look forward to that conversation on the to be developed chat room.
And so that just we can even this out, I just want to ask if Darlene is here or Dr. Sajida. Oh no, so we couldn't get those people here.
Lots.
Yep. Okay.
Right.
I think this is great. Is there any other thing before we just sign off? Oh, I love it. This is
all
great.
Right.
Nice group.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
We looked forward to the call, realizing that every one of you is very, very involved, and I feel like we, even though I've not met all of you, it's really kind of neat to think that everyone who logged in is an active, really energetic participant. So we really do appreciate it, and I'll be in touch with you soon regarding setting up a chat room. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.